We're talking to Laura Trump, who is the daughter-in-law of the President of the United States, married to Eric Trump. But just as interestingly, she helped win North Carolina in 2016 and might be doing even more in this campaign cycle. Let's see. Laura came from North Carolina, came to New York when she was 24 years old, middle-class upbringing, worked her way through state college, and ever since has been succeeding in a big way. I know she has two children, again, married to Eric. And I would just suggest that everybody check out three things if you really want to be blown away and see something of just magnificent quality. Number one, her speech at the RNC. Number two, her performance on two recent Sunday shows, Chris Wallace, Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, and Jake Tapper on CNN. Laura, welcome. You totally blew it out of the water each time. Anyway, how are you?
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, I appreciate it. I'm doing great. I am sometimes shocked that I've ended up in this position, as you just said, sort of my background and upbringing. But here I am, and you can hear my son in the background. I'm going to try and get rid of him.
Don't worry about it. No, it's fine. I know their names. Luke and Carolina, right?
This is Luke. Yes, Carolina's napping, so I'm here with Luke. And no, look, it's great to be on with you. And I'm a big fan of yours, Greg. I've been seeing you for years since I moved to New York. So I'm honored to be on with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks a lot. And so do me a favor, Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina, where is that?
Wrightsville Beach is right off the coast of Wilmington. It's sort of the southeast coast of North Carolina. And that's exactly where I grew up.
So I lived in New Bern, North Carolina for 2 years when I was in the Marine Corps flying Harriers, and I know the area well, and I absolutely had an amazing time in North Carolina. Where did you go to college?
I went to NC State in Raleigh, North Carolina, and by the way, I want to say it's very kind of you to say that I helped win in 2016, the state of North Carolina. I obviously give my father-in-law full credit for that, but it was truly an honor to be able to have him kind of task me with helping him win. And it's, you know, obviously my home state, my whole family still lives there. So thrilled that it went for Donald Trump in 2016, and we're working hard for 2020.
Well, it's a swing state, and nothing like having a native who's fiercely loyal to the principal. And wait, real quick, back to North Carolina State. What did you major in?
I majored in communication media, and I have a French minor.
Do you speak French now?
Oui, bien sûr, je parle français.
Wow, so cool. And let's see, before you came to New York, and I know you made that big trip when you were 24. So, oh, you said at the RNC you worked jobs for tips. Were you a waitress? What did you do?
Yeah, well, like many people, in 2005 when I graduated from college, I thought that, I had been a great student. I'd kind of done everything right, followed the plan that I think most people do, go to high school, then if you go to college, you study hard. And I thought there would be a job waiting for me. And the job market at that time, Greg, as you might remember, 2005 was not great. So I got out of school, did not have, a job waiting for me. And I did what I think a lot of people do. I worked as a waitress. I worked as a bartender, part-time personal trainer. I've had a lot of jobs. I know very well exactly what that's like. And I can tell you now, whenever I go to a restaurant, I am a great tipper because I really appreciate all of the waiters and waitresses out there. That is a tough job dealing day in and day out with people, but I'm very appreciative every time.
So Mrs. B, your teacher, English teacher in seventh grade, you mentioned her during your RNC speech. What was the advice or what was the guidance she gave you?
It's so funny because in seventh grade, I had no idea what this meant. And as I got older and as I became Trump, part of the Trump family, and then obviously the sort of entry into politics that we all had in 2015, it became very clear to me exactly what she meant and what she told us. And she would repeat this like every single week in school for an entire school year. She would say, believe none of what you hear, half of what you read, and only what you're there to witness firsthand. And as I was writing my speech for the RNC, because, side note, we all wrote our own speeches. We don't have speech writers. It came straight from our heart for all of us in the family. I found that to be exactly what I wish people would think these days as you're taking in information, as you're on social media, as you're hearing, you know, certain news outlets out there, and I use the word news very loosely there, because it's very frustrating, I think, to all of us in the family to know the truth so oftentimes and then hear something completely different reported. And for any time, I think, in the history of this country, that advice that I received from, her name is Mrs. Believer Nick, but we called her Mrs. B in seventh grade, was pretty sound advice, I think.
Interesting. And you know what? Probably more so now, but I know presidents have always complained about this. President Eisenhower, of all people, he marveled at that. He was in the center of public life for about 20 years outside of the presidency as well. And he said, basically, the media never got it right. They never knew what they were talking about because he always had the inside story. How did you meet Eric?
Well, it's sort of one of those stories that I feel like had one thing changed, one thing gone differently in an evening, we would have never met and I would never be here and who knows how life would have turned out. But I moved to New York 13 years ago. My roommate at the time, I lived on Roosevelt Island, side note, anybody that lives in New York knows where that is. Yeah. I didn't know at the time what that was, but she decided that she had a friend in town and we were going to go out. I think it was a Thursday night. And I was so set up to just stay in the whole night. I was in like sweatpants and I was really just going to relax and watch movies. And she begged me to go out with her. And sure enough, that was the night that I met Eric. And I did not know, by the way, that Donald Trump had sons, quite frankly. I knew of Ivanka, I think, because I got like 17 magazine or something back in the day. And I think she was in there. But I certainly didn't know that an individual named Eric Trump even existed. Sort of the first way I even noticed Eric is that there was a guy sort of across this club that we were at who was the same, taller than I was. And I was wearing heels and I'm 5'11". So that was like a big, strong, like plus in the right box for me. And that was about, 12 and a half years ago now, which is unbelievable. And we met obviously when I was like 10. So,
well, you probably don't remember this, but about a year, I guess you were dating Eric. I was in a bar, I believe it was in a Trump building on Central Park South, Trump Atrium or something like that, the Blue Whiskey or whatever.
Whiskey Park. It's no longer there, yes.
Right. So I was there with a friend of mine, a buddy, and I saw three people. Two were obviously a couple, and the other one seems to be a friend, and somebody who was friendly with you, friendly but not part of the couple. Anyway, I was mesmerized by this woman. Number one, I thought she was single, and I just was like, I've got to find a way to talk to her. And then I'm strategizing, and I'm finally like, you know, I'm gonna ask this guy when he walked by, just like I can't just walk up to three people and say, hey. So I said to this fellow, "Hey, look, I know this sounds totally weird, but that woman over there, is she with you guys? Do you know anything about her?" It's like, "Oh yeah, totally, Greg. It's Eric Trump," and I'm like, "What? Yeah, Eric Trump. You interviewed me. And I interviewed him once over the phone, but I had never met him in person, and it was so cool. Anyway, he introduced me to Angela. Do you remember a girl named Angela? Are you guys still friends?"
Angela.
This is 12 years ago.
I'm blanking on this now.
She was really into horses. And anyway.
That's my kind of girl.
So she, Eric introduced me and you guys were totally cool, but it was interesting. It was the first time. I think Eric liked it for a couple of reasons. Number one, I treated him like, you know, I was very respectful and I didn't know it was Eric Trump. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's very nice.
And I was kind of, I marvel that somebody of his stature knew who I was as I was just in the trenches of local news. Anyway, bizarre little side note. And
that's so funny.
I'll never forget it. And I think I still have his business card that he gave me. Anyway, so look, you get married, you've got kids, you're part of the Trump family. And I kind of want to fast forward to you on a national stage. When did you start giving full-fledged interviews to the National Political Press Corps? Were you doing that in 16, or is that more recent?
Yeah, no, I did it. I did it in 2016. It was sort of, by the way, can I just say, people think that everyone in our family has had some sort of formal media training. I'll give you the formal media training. It's, here's an interview we have set up for you. Good luck. Like, that's basically how it went. But in 2016, I got to travel all over the country, obviously, and people, I wasn't really at that time totally in tune with what news outlets, you know, believed what things, because I mean, none of us had been involved in politics before this. So I remember one of the interviews being with like MSNBC, and I had no idea what I was about to walk into, but I was doing, yes, national interviews for sure back in 2016. And apparently I handled it okay, because otherwise, you know, we would have heard about it if it was a complete disaster. But yeah, I started back then, and I think the last time, other than when you saw me on CNN, you know, last Sunday, was 2016 election day. It was the last time they asked me to come on there. So I don't know if I'll get an invite anytime soon, but we'll see.
Well, because you knock it out of the park, and sometimes the hosts don't like that, especially when they're setting up trap after trap. So I have this theory. Look, you studied media and journalism in college, that the ultimate trick to being on TV or either interviewing or being interviewed is that there's no trick. There's, quite frankly, the secret is there's no secret. And what you exude, you're totally comfortable. And I think you're totally in charge, and you know what you know, and you're confident in that. So does that make sense? I am a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it absolutely makes sense. I mean, because I think you either, you go out there and you know what you're talking about, and you just lay your facts out, which, look, I don't get nervous for interviews because I know I have the facts on my side. I know, you know, everything that I need to know. I know that I can back this president up because he has an incredible track record. So I think you're right. I think, look, you, they're a trick. You just go out there and you do it. And that's what we do.
Well, but having said that, there is, some people are good at it. Some people are great at it. Some people are preternaturally skilled at it. And I really would put you in that category, certainly on the Wallace Show and also with Jake Tapper. These were two people kind of, as most Sunday people are, Sunday hosts, they're out to get you. And you, do you remember, like, what kind of zone were you in? I encourage everybody to watch these things. No, I mean, like, I've seen senators. I've seen, we've prominent people who've been doing it for years who did not do it as well as you. And
that's,
I mean,
so nice.
Well, did you hear
you.
That from anyone else? I mean, and I know you're modest and all, but did anybody realize or tell you that this was incredibly good work?
Thank you. Yeah, no, I have heard it from people, and I got to tell you, I feel kind of shocked every time I hear that, because I think part of the way I operate too, and maybe what part of it is that I was raised with certain values. My parents always taught me to be kind to people and to treat people with respect. And by the way, even people who are being totally nasty to you and really trying to very clearly, you know, get you, as you just said, and trip you up and make you look stupid or whatever their goal is. And so regardless of the questions, no matter how nasty I think they are or how appropriate I think they are, I try to always be incredibly respectful and conduct myself with, I don't know, a certain, I don't even know how to explain it, but maybe that's part of it as well, because I know I'm a good person and I know I'm going to act as a good person. And again, I know I have the facts on my side, and I'm trying to disseminate that. And quite frankly, it's their problem if they have an ulterior motive. And I think sadly they do oftentimes. But thank you. That is so nice. And I don't really know what else to attribute that to, but I really appreciate it. It's very nice to hear.
Well, the one thing, one more question on this in terms, did you watch a lot of people, get interviewed, and did you consume a lot of media when you were growing up? I remember I've never been interviewed like you've been interviewed on a hostile Sunday talk show, but I did watch my father get interviewed for many years, and I consumed a lot of this stuff. And one time I went to this communication school in the military. It was a 2-week thing. And at the end of it, I had to kind of give the press conference, and I found myself pretty good at it. And I attributed that to, you know, I just saw it done a lot. So did you consume a lot of this stuff, a lot of media growing up?
Well, I don't know that I consumed a lot of it growing up, but, you know, I worked as a associate producer for Inside Edition for a number of years when right after I moved to New York and before I started helping with the campaign in 2016. And having to be the person who is behind the camera, who is asking the questions, who knows later that I have to cut a piece and it's got to be a certain length of time, and I know what questions I'm going to need and what answers I'm trying to get and the length of those. I guess I always in the back of my mind know that as a viewer, there are people that once you go and kind of like ramble on for too long, I think it's a little distracting for the viewer and you lose them. And so maybe there's just some sense that I've gotten from that experience from working in television, but working behind the scenes that, you know, this is a succinct soundbite and you get your point across and you don't need a lot of extra information and then you just leave it at that. Yeah. So perhaps that's part of it.
You know, one thing I saw on Tapper, it was, and look, I'm sure he's a nice guy and they have a job to do, and their job is quite frankly feeding their liberal base, and they want to give them red meat, mm-hmm. and they want to give them, they want to keep them entertained and mad. But what they tried with, the young man who stutters, and Joe Biden, and basically using that little boy, and we'll put a link to our website, as a human shield for Joe Biden. It was, they were trying to imply that somehow you were being disrespectful to a child with a stutter when that was light years away from your thinking. You had no idea about this kid, and quite frankly, well-informed people did not know that Joe Biden had a stutter. Some did, some didn't. Did you have any inkling that he had a stutter?
Of course not. What are you kidding me? First of all, that video that Jake Tapper pulled last Sunday was from 10 months ago. I was campaigning in January in Iowa. Okay. So if you back up, I think we all very clearly saw in those primary debates how uncomfortable it became as an audience member to watch Joe Biden searching for words, not sure what he was saying, how he was going to say it, what the point of his sentence was oftentimes. That's a really uncomfortable thing to watch. And I mean, I genuinely felt bad for this guy. Yeah. Of course, I had no idea he had a stutter. Neither did most Americans. And I have yet to see Joe Biden have an issue with stuttering. So if that's what they're trying to tell you, I don't know. That it still doesn't hold up in my opinion.
No, it's ridiculous. Look, Joe Biden is remarkably inarticulate, and he doesn't belong on the national stage for a lot of reasons. So I actually got into it with Tapper after I saw that interview, and I pointed out that I had heard, you know, rumblings about stuttering with Joe Biden, rumblings, not much at all. And for him to ask that question the way he did was totally unfair. Having said that, there was like a line in his book and some other book, but Joe Biden established his identity as in a couple of ways. Number one, he was a plagiarist. Number two, he hassled Anita Hill. And three, he was just kind of an affable, kind of semi-dumb senator. You don't have to agree with any of that, but I'm just saying people knew who this guy was long before he even started talking about his stutter. I actually looked up his campaign kickoff speech in 1987. He did not talk about any stutter. It only became a talking point with him when it became fashionable and when it became politically advantageous. And quite frankly, I still have doubts about whether or not he has a stutter. So, and Tapper went back, well, in 1992, it was mentioned in this book, but...
Oh, my gosh.
There are things...
Because we're all there paging through the Biden book, please.
Right.
Like anybody's...
No, it's nonsense. So what is your job right now on the campaign?
So I'm a senior advisor to the campaign. I have been, by the way, since 2017. There was a small group of us that remained at the campaign because the president... And, you know, of course, this is not a normal president, so we didn't have a normal campaign. Normally, campaigns shut down after the president is inaugurated, but this president wanted to keep it up and running. Obviously, You've seen that since he was inaugurated, he has continued to hold rallies at various times. We have always been responsible for those. But day to day, I mean, my job can range from right now, it's mostly being out on the campaign trail, but, you know, dealing with advertising, doing focus groups, you know, making very broad decisions for the campaign, comms stuff. I mean, it kind of ranges every single day and runs the gamut. But that is my official title, senior advisor to the president's reelection campaign.
Can you give me, out of respect, I think your campaign said you had 20 minutes. Can you give me another five?
Sure.
So what's it like when you, I assume you've slept over at the White House, correct?
Yes. Yes, I have.
What is that like? What is it? I mean, you probably went to the White House as a kid, as a tourist, I bet, on some school trip or something. Did you ever?
Well, I actually did not. No, I remember I went to Washington, D.C. as like our fifth grade, I think, class trip or something. But no, I never stepped foot on the grounds of the White House. And it was, I mean, it's still, quite frankly, a surreal experience every time you even go to the White House. To know that I could just decide to go to the White House and that's not a big deal is just mind-blowing for me. But yes, spending the night there and spending the night, by the way, in the Lincoln bedroom, which I have a couple of times, it's unbelievable to think of the history there, to think of what that house and what that building has represented and means in the history of this country. There in the Lincoln bedroom, there is a replica. It's not even a replica. I think it is the Emancipation Proclamation, and it is behind just a very small pane of glass that you could lift up if you wanted to. It's unbelievable. And I don't take it for granted one single day. I know how lucky I am to be there and to get to spend any time there at all. So just, it's surreal to me every time. And I think Eric would agree with that too. We both know that this is just, it's an unbelievable and remarkable thing to be able to do.
What is something about Donald Trump, the president, that might surprise someone? I know, I'm sure you've been asked that before, but is there anything like a hobby that he has that we've never heard of, or just something that, anything that comes to mind that for all that we know about him, and he's the most documented and chronicled guy probably ever in human history, but is there something about him that would surprise us pleasantly?
Well, look, his hobby is obviously just winning, which we know. But, you know, I think that people oftentimes don't appreciate how funny he is. He's one of the funniest people I have ever been around. And I'm telling you, when we have dinners together, which are very infrequent, unfortunately, right now. But when we all get together and have dinner, it is, I feel like I just laugh for like 3 hours straight, because the way he tells a story, the things he says, he's just a really funny, actually lighthearted and good-spirited guy. I mean, I think you probably have to be in some ways to get through kind of the hell that they've put him through over the past really 5 years at this point. And look, people can see this, I think, but he loves his family so much. He's a great grandfather. I know he wishes he got to see my kids, Luke and Carolina, more. I feel like I hear from everybody that whenever he's doing a rally now in North Carolina, he's like, and my granddaughter is named after this state. She's named Carolina after this state. But I wish people just got to see the more lighthearted, real side of him. He's a real person. You know, people forget that. They say a lot of terrible things about him, and he's an easy target for people. But you know what? He's a real person. And he's just a great person to be around. I wish we all got to spend more time together, but when we are together, I'll tell you what, I'm laughing the whole time because he's a really funny person.
You know, I want to tell you something about Eric that I noticed. And, in addition to being an incredible gentleman, and he's so, he's very sophisticated. And I saw this documentary once that I'm still trying to find. I was going around the dial and there was some English broadcaster getting a tour of some Trump property. I don't remember what one it was. And Eric said something like, every detail of this place, you know, I'm familiar with. And she's like, really? Well, you mean this? What kind of grass do you have outside? And he named the type of grass. And then she's like, well, what about that lamp? And he said, it's Osterling or something like that. And she said, oh, that sounds German. And he said, Austrian, actually. And
oh yeah.
It was that moment, and I could see it in her face. She's like, oh gosh, I'm in over my head, and these people are not what I was told. I was told that they're a bunch of yahoos and they don't know, but it was, and I just love that. I love that moment. And if you know about it, or if Eric knows where I can find it, because
I don't even know what that is. I would like to know about it. I'd like to see him. I've seen him in action myself, when he's at the properties. And I'll tell you something. I've been totally ruined because he has such an eye for detail that you go to a Trump property with Eric and it's not even like, say you sit down to have lunch. Yeah, right. He's picking out every single issue. There's a light bulb out over here and it's on a chandelier with like 500 light bulbs on there, right? He'll see everything. And so now my eye goes to all that stuff. I know anytime I go to a Trump property, the general managers are probably like, oh no, it's like Eric, times two here. Here I come, because I'll tell them if I see any issues with anything too. But look, they take very seriously the Trump family. All of their properties, their business, they always have. I mean, you think about the fact that Donald Trump spent his entire life creating this organization and really branding himself and the name Trump. And it means a lot to the family. They are the hardest working people I know. People that is lost on people, that they get called a lot of awful things. But Eric especially, I'll tell you, knows every detail of every property. What you said is exactly right, and I would love to find that. So I'll ask Eric about that.
Yeah, it's remarkable. So listen, there's only a week and a half left to go. What are your plans? What are you focusing on? Is there a part of the country? Is there a particular media forum for you? What are you going to be doing next 10 days?
Well, I'll be part of the time on the Women for Trump bus. This is something that I kind of helped start in 2016, our women's coalition. We have a bright pink bus. It says Women for Trump on the side. I'm sure when we roll through like liberal cities, they're so stoked we're there, but they can see us. So I'll be in Florida this coming week, in North Carolina, and not yet sure about next weekend and the following, day or so. But we're focused on, look, it's really about getting out the vote. The reality is, I think people have pretty much decided for whom they will vote. But the bottom line is, if you don't get out and you don't vote, it doesn't matter. And there's a lot of polling out there. They try to tell people Donald Trump isn't going to win. Don't forget, folks, you heard this in 2016 as well. So we're really just out there encouraging people to early vote in their state if that's offered. And make sure they have, send in their absentee ballot if that's what they're going to do. But it's all about getting out the vote. That's the name of the game for the next, 9 days here. And we'll be on the road. I actually think that today might be the last day I see my husband until election day. So it's a little crazy. But you know what? There's nothing more important. It's hard, so hard every week when I have to leave my kids and get out on the road. But you know what? We're doing this for them. We're doing it for the next generation, two generations and beyond in America, because it's the most consequential election in modern history of America. And everybody's got to get out and they got to do their part and vote for President Trump.
Well, I think you're going to shock the world all over again. I really do. Thank you, Laura. By the way, I feel it in my bones, just as I felt, and one day I should send you this clip or I should play it on the podcast, but I predicted that Donald Trump would win on June 16th, 2015, which you'll remember was the day
wow.
he declared. Yes, and I did it
That's
publicly.
Right.
I did it on television.
Good
and,
for you.
But this time around, I know six or seven people, and I live in Chelsea, Manhattan. I mean, this is no conservative enclave. But six or seven people have told me randomly that they, over the past 6 weeks or so, have gotten themselves to Trump rallies two states away. I mean,
wow.
that's a thing. And I just can't imagine anyone making plans and driving two states. These are civilians. These aren't political operatives. These aren't even terribly political people. I can't see anybody in the world doing that for Joe Biden. I just can't. I see it all the time for your guy and for my guy. I'm really rooting for him. People know that. And well, Laura, thank you. Please, safe travels, and give my very best to Eric, if you would.
I will. Thank you, Greg. This was really nice. And what a nice what a nice Sunday interview, by the way, as opposed to my other ones.
Well, I'm afraid really it may not go viral, but the last one, it was tremendous, and you are gifted, truly gifted. And thank you, Laura. All the best.
Thank you.
She's so cool, and I'm being 1,000% serious. I am her performance on those Sunday shows and that RNC speech, flawless. I mean, perfect. I've been watching those things for a long time. We all have. Well, not everybody watches those Sunday shows, and she just is truly gifted. It's her calling, I think. So we thank Laura Trump again. And what else? Okay, here's the deal on this podcast thing, new venture for me. If you don't mind, I would greatly appreciate it. Write and review a podcast, my podcast. Thank you. It'll help with whatever the heck it is supposed to help with. And in the meantime, thanks so much. And let's see, you can follow me on Twitter, although lately I've been pretty nasty on Twitter. I let it all hang out on that Twitter, and maybe that's not a good thing, but you know, it's like going to a ball game and yelling your head off. That's how I view it. And you say things in favor of your team, and you say things against the other team that you would never say if you were not in the ballpark, right? So keep that in mind, at Greg Kelly USA. And then there's the Newsmax show at 7 p.m. Monday through Friday and East Coast time. So, to be continued, everybody, and thank you.